Today, I'm going to be going over everything that you need to know if you're a brand new player in Rise of Kingdoms, or if you haven't played in a long time and you're just getting back into it. What's going on, guys? Cheers. It's summer of 2022 and a lot of players are joining Rise of Kingdoms right now, and I haven't made an updated beginner's guide in a while, so let's get right into it. Now, really quick, if this is the first Rise of Kingdoms video of mine that you're watching, I am a player of over 1,306 days. That's right, I've played this game every single day for over 3.5 years, and I've been making consistent content for Rise of Kingdoms since 2020. So I'm gonna try to give you guys as much information as I can that I've learned in the last 3.5 years in this one video, which means it might be a little bit long, but don't worry, there's going to be chapters so you can skip to the point of video that you actually care about. And if there's a topic that you want to learn more about, I've probably already covered it in a video, so make sure you subscribe to the channel if you're new here. And if it's something that I haven't covered before, make sure you comment it down below. Now, the first thing I want to cover really quickly is, what should your goals be as a new player in Rise of Kingdoms? Well, the whole point of the game is to build your city up to maximum level, which is City Hall 25, construct a massive army of infantry, cavalry, and archer units, and collect powerful legendary commanders to bring those armies into battle against other players in different servers. In Rise of Kingdoms, large-scale PvP happens in events known as KVKs, or Kingdom versus Kingdoms, and as you can see here, I'm in one right now. It lasts for the next 48 days. It just began, so these are large and long battles, and they're incredibly fun if you're playing with the right people. Now, since the server or kingdom that you play in plays such a big role in your Rise of Kingdoms experience, it's important to pick a good kingdom to play the game in. And what I recommend to do as a beginner in the game for the best kingdom or server to join is whatever is the newest kingdom at that time. So right now, at the recording of this video, the two newest kingdoms are 2818 and 2819. And the reason that the newest kingdom introduced is the best to join as a new player is for a few reasons. The first is that joining a brand new kingdom gives you the Rise of Kingdoms event. This event only comes around once at the beginning of a brand new kingdom, and it's very important for new players because it gives you a ton of free speed ups, resources, and a bunch of things that you need to start the game with a small advantage. It lasts a couple of days, and after it's gone, it's over. But again, it's very important to maximize the rewards that you get from that event. And then a few days after that event, there is another event that comes around called Lohar's Trial. Now, this event does come around periodically in the future, but it's important to have this event at the beginning of the game because this is how you're going to unlock an epic commander known as Lohar, and it's the only way to unlock him in the game. Now, Lohar is actually horrible when it comes to fighting other players in the game, but he's incredibly important for killing barbarians in the open field, and he's one of the most important commanders in the beginning of the game because his third skill gives you 70% more experience. So by getting Lohar right at the beginning of the game, you're going to be able to level up all of your other future commanders a little bit faster. Now, after you take advantage of the Rise of Kingdoms event and all of the new bonuses that you get by joining a new kingdom, you can always transfer to another server later in the game by using items called passport pages. Now, the number of pages you need to migrate to another kingdom depends on your power level, but for most players in the early game, it is extremely cheap and easy to move to a new kingdom because it's only going to require 1, 2, maybe 3 passport pages, and you can get these pages for free from your alliance shop. You can see in here, and we'll talk more about alliances in a moment, but you can get them by exchanging alliance credits. I believe it's 600,000 alliance credits for a single page, or if you need a ton of these passport pages, you can purchase them directly from the shop in the New World bundle. However, I will note that most players probably won't have to buy this bundle until much later into the game, and it's definitely not a requirement. Now, I know some of you are probably thinking, okay, well, if I want to move to a new kingdom, just tell me which kingdom I should move to. What's the best server in the game right now? And that's not really how it works in Rise of Kingdoms. The top 30 kingdoms by power are known as Imperium kingdoms, and there are usually a lot of restrictions on how many players can go to those kingdoms, and that's to just prevent the game from being way too lopsided towards one or two kingdoms. Now, I could talk all day about like whether or not you should leave your home kingdom, your home server, and what makes another kingdom or server a good one to go to. But a good rule of thumb is that if your home kingdom is having a lot of civil wars, meaning that leadership is not coercive and there's not a really good plan moving forward. People are constantly fighting. That's going to make competing in kingdom versus kingdom a lot harder, because you guys are already fighting amongst yourselves, and if that can't be resolved, then you probably want to move to another kingdom where leadership is strong and things are organized. Now, once you've created a character in the newest server, next thing you're going to do is pick your civilization, and this is a big choice. This is sort of like the Charmander, Squirtle, or Bulbasaur moment at the beginning of Pokemon. It's which civilization should you pick as a brand new player? Which one is meta? Which one is the best? Which one gives you the best commander? Now, I'm not going to go into detail about when you would pick each specific civilization, because for new players, it's pretty simple. One, keep in mind that these civilizations are more of a micro optimization and they're not that important in the early game. It's not going to make or break your progress if you pick Rome over China, because around City Hall 10 to 12, you get a free civilization change item, which will let you pick a new civilization for free. So you don't have to worry about if you picked the wrong civilization. But as a beginner, I would say the best civilization to pick would either be France, Britain, or Germany, with China coming in at a close fourth. The reason that these stand above the others for new players is because when you pick a civilization, your main quests will periodically give you sculptures of the featured commander. So for France, you get Joan of Arc, and she is going to be very, very good in the early game, not only because she's just in general one of the most supportive and best epic commanders in the entire game, but also because she gives you 25% gathering speed and 25% load bonus. And gathering in the early game is going to be extremely important for new players, because you're going to need a lot of resources, especially stone, to upgrade your wall, your city hall, your tavern. Having Joan of Arc at the very beginning is really going to help you. Now, the reason you might choose Britain over France is because Boudica does give you bonus experience when fighting barbarians in the open field, which again, at the beginning of the game, similar to having Lohar, is going to help you level up your other commanders. And that's very, very valuable in the early game. Now, the reason that Germany is a contender here is actually not because of Herman, the commander. He's actually not that great. Germany gives you 10% action point recovery, which is extremely useful, especially as a new player and a free to play player. Plus you get some troop training speed. And finally, China is because Sun Tzu is the best PvP epic commander in the game at the time of recording this. And for those of you who don't know, PvP is player versus player. My recommendation for free to play players is start as either France or Britain. My preference is France. And then later around City Hall 10 or 12, switch to Germany, so that way you get the bonus action point recovery. After you switch, you're still going to be gaining the sculptures for the commander that you started with. That's why it says starting commander will not be affected. One last thing to mention about civilizations is that when you join Rise of Kingdoms, there's probably going to be a new civilization called Egypt. And at the time of recording this, we know that civilization is coming into the game, but we don't know the buffs for that civilization. So I can't say definitively if that civilization will be on par with some of the other ones that I've discussed here. But what I can say is that Joan of Arc is definitely a better starting commander than the commander you start with for Egypt. Okay, now that you've picked your civilization and you're just starting the game, what are some of the early game goals that you should be focusing on? The very first thing that you want to do in Rise of Kingdoms is join the best possible alliance, the strongest and most active alliance that you can find in your kingdom. Being a part of an alliance is what keeps people playing Rise of Kingdoms. The community of this game is actually very strong. People like to talk in the world chat, and that sense of community is really what has made this game so popular. But not only that, there are so many benefits of playing in an active and powerful alliance. Arguably the most important part is that you get alliance technology, and some of the technology, such as Together We Rise, actually allows your alliance members to speed up the production of your buildings and your technology research for your account, which means you get to speed through the early game levels a little bit faster with the help of an active alliance, compared to somebody who doesn't join an alliance and just slowly levels things up over time. Beyond that, joining an alliance allows you to rally forts in the open field, which will give everybody in the alliance free gifts, such as this level 11 fort trophy. So you can see everything that says claimed here. I got a bunch of stone, action points, wood, and things along those lines for free just by being an alliance and having other people in the alliance do these forts. Now, of course, it's important to also contribute to those forts once in a while. And on top of that, when people in the alliance make purchases, you also will benefit. So if you're an alliance with people who spend a lot of money, then you're actually going to get a ton of benefits, including free gems and speed ups. You're going to get gold keys. You're going to get VIP points. I mean, look at this. I get 15 hours of speed ups for free just because somebody purchased a golden chest. All of the stuff that you get here is extremely important for early game development, which is again why you want to join an active alliance as soon as possible. Oh, and also as the territory expands, you're going to get free resources over time, which is super important. Next, you also want to focus on your VIP level in the early game, specifically getting to VIP 6 as soon as possible. This is important because you unlock the second building queue, which means you can upgrade two buildings at the same time, effectively doubling the progress of your building upgrades, which is extremely important because again, the first thing you want to do and focus on, your first main goal, is getting your city hall to 25 as fast as possible. Now, I know sometimes in other mobile games it's important to sort of level up all of your buildings around the same time at the same level, so everything goes to, let's say, 20 and then you upgrade everything to 21 before progressing your city hall to 22. That is not the case in Rise of Kingdoms. You want to speed this level of the city hall to 25 as fast as possible. Now, there are some prerequisites. So for example, you can only upgrade your city hall if you've upgraded your wall to as high as it can go, and you can only upgrade your wall as high as it can go if you've upgraded your tavern as high as it can go, and this requires one of your quarries to be leveled up as high as it can go. But for the most part, you can ignore a lot of the buildings in the early game and just focus on whatever you need for your city hall. Now, let's talk about a couple of things to help you get this city hall to 25 as fast as possible. The first thing that I want to mention is that you actually can have up to two characters on the same server at the same time. So this is important to know because a lot of players, especially free-to-play players, will have what's known as a farm account, meaning you run two accounts at the same time. One is your main account where you're focusing on really powerful commanders and getting it to City Hall 25. The other account, which you can see here, I called Mini Omniarch, is literally just to farm materials and then send those materials to your main account. So effectively, you are doubling almost the amount of resource production and gathering that you have for your main city, and this is going to be extremely important. Now, we're going to talk a little bit more about which commanders you should be focusing on in Rise of Kingdoms as a brand new player, but the first thing that I want you to focus on if you're a new player is, again, getting City Hall to 25 and which commanders are going to be useful in doing that. The answer is going to be your gathering commanders. In the early game, you should have as much of your experience going to your gathering commanders as possible, specifically getting them to level 40. You'll see here that I have a lot of my gathering commanders at level 40. Realistically, you only need 5 commanders at level 40 because you can only have 5 marches in the open field in your home kingdom. But the reason you want to get your gathering commanders to level 40 and then stop is because that's how many talents you need to get to the end of the gathering tree here. These are talent points. You get talent points for leveling up your commander and also adding new star levels to your commander, and 40 is the minimum requirement to not only get all of the talents that you need from the gathering tree, but also to put some points in extra bonus things such as modified axle, which increases the march speed of siege units by 30%. That just means you're going to get to and from the resource nodes on the map a little bit faster, which I think is important. Anything beyond level 40 is sort of useless because you're never going to use gathering commanders to fight, which means you never really need points in the defense tree or the integration tree or anything like that. And even if your gathering commanders are sort of ambushed while they're gathering, you're not going to be able to defend yourself anyway, regardless of what talents you have. So it's better to not waste the experience beyond 40 and just leave them there. The way you're going to level up these commanders to 40 in the early game is by defeating as many barbarians as you can outside of your city. You'll find them just roaming around your kingdom. They spawn randomly and they vary in level. You can also use the barbarian search feature to just find a nearby barbarian of a particular level. Keep in mind that some levels of barbarians only spawn in different zones on the map, so the closer to the center of the map you are, the higher the level the barbarian. So if you don't see any level 25s around, that's why you're probably in the wrong zone. But killing these barbarians is important because not only does it give you a lot of really important things for progressing your account, such as the arrows of resistance, which you're going to need a ton of those to get your city hall to 25, but also because of the experience that they give you. You can see this here. Now, one thing I want you to note is how much experience the Boudica and Matilda got here, 3,600, whereas my Lohar fighting the exact same barbarian with Ethelfled got 5,000 experience. So again, that's a good illustration of why Lohar is so important, because you get a lot more experience from killing the same thing. On top of that, you're going to get some training speed ups, some Tombs of Knowledge, which are basically just universal XP that you can choose who gets it, even if they weren't in that fight. For example, my Julius Caesar, I just hit the plus button here, and then I have all of the Tombs of Knowledge that are in my inventory, and I can just use these on whatever commander I want. Now, you can't just kill barbarians all day forever. There is a limit, because it costs action points in order to attack a barbarian. You can see here, if I want to attack this level 24 with my Boudica and Joan of Arc, it's going to cost 40 action points. Now, one of the cool things about Boudica and Lohar is that because they have the peacekeeping tree, they are designed to fight barbarians. So this talent here, Insight, reduces the action points required by 10. So it actually costs less to fight barbarians with the peacekeeping commanders than for any else. Now, these action points recover over time. Here you can see that it will take about 8 hours for me to completely refill my action points, or you can use action point recovery items that you get, as you saw, from destroying barbarian forts and various other methods. You can get these from doing events and things like that. But because there is a cap on how much you can have, so for me it's 1,700 action points, and then at that point I will no longer be regenerating action points. So in the beginning of the game, it is crucial, especially for free-to-play players, to spend down your action points all the time. Whenever you log in, when you first wake up, if you turn on Rise of Kingdoms, you're gonna have probably full action points, and that's when you want to go out and fight as many barbarians as you can, get this all the way down to zero before logging off. Okay, you don't want to overfill and be stuck at that cap, because then you're just wasting those action points that you could be recovering. And again, you need to get these commanders, especially in the early game, the gatherers, to level 40 as fast as possible. Now, I do want to mention barbarian forts really quickly. The reason that you want to take down barbarian forts with your alliance isn't just because of the alliance gifts, which are nice, but also because they will give you a lot of experience and things that you need to progress. But the most important thing that you get from barbarian forts is called Books of the Covenant. These are another item that you need to get your city hall to 25. These and the Arrows of Resistance are both obtained primarily through PvE content, or player versus environment content. So doing your barbarians is going to get you the Arrows of Resistance. Doing the barbarian forts is going to get you the Books of the Covenant. Without them, you cannot get your city hall to 25. So make sure that you're spending down all of your action points as much as possible. And this is the other reason why I mentioned earlier that Germany is so good for free-to-play players, because you get 10% faster action point recovery. Now, once you've spent down all your action points for the day, or if you're going to log off or go to work or whatever, it's important to have all of your armies gathering while you're offline. Now, I know I'm sort of breaking that rule right now because I'm distracted making this video, but you can see that I've spent my action points down to zero, and then I sent out my gatherers. The importance here is that gathering takes a lot of time. It takes a while to completely deplete a resource node in the open field. There's never a point in time in Rise of Kingdoms where you shouldn't be gathering, because you're always going to need those resources. In the early game, it's so that way you can get your buildings to 25, so that way you can research technology, which requires a decent amount of gold. But also beyond that, in the late game, tier 5 units, the actual units that you're going to be fighting with, are extremely expensive to train. They cost a lot of food, wood, stone, and especially gold to train your army. This is why when you log off, when you have no more action points to spend, that's when you want to go ahead and gather as much as possible to maximize the downtime, the time that you're away from the game. You're still making progress by getting those resources. Now, we've talked a lot about getting your city hall to 25, and one of the most important things when getting to that point is your academy. Now, your academy here is going to allow you to research technology. There's two different branches of technology. There's economic and military, and if you're a new player in the game, you should primarily focus on economic technology first, because there's a lot of key things here that are going to help you push your military technology even faster. A couple of examples of this are masonry. This is extremely important. It increases your building speed by 15%. So again, when you get access to this, you want to get this to level 5 as fast as possible before upgrading the other buildings, because this is just free time reduction. Same thing with writing. This technology is going to reduce the research speed of all other technologies in the future by just making sure that this is at 5. So you want to prioritize this as well. Further down the tree, you have engineering and mathematics. Both of these are a sort of advanced versions of those, further increasing your building and research speed. So make sure you go ahead and do that. And finally, machinery is going to give you faster gathering speed. Carriage lets you hold more resources. So as you can see, there's so much stuff here, and I've gone past all the other important stuff, like actually just getting more food and wood and stuff within your city. So all of this stuff is what's going to help you get to City Hall 25. And then once you've pushed as far into the economic technology as you can, then you can start to work on some of the military technology. And this is where you're going to unlock the next tier of units. So you get tier 2 units, you're going to get tier 3 units, you're going to get tier 4 units, and so on and so forth, all the way up to tier 5, which again are the most powerful units in the game at the time of recording this. Doesn't seem like that's going to change, but hey, it could. And pushing a little bit into the military technology at the beginning of the game is good as well, because you are going to need stronger units in order to push farther into the single player campaign. Having higher tier units with more attack, defense, and health and stats along those lines is going to help you push farther and progress your account. So a little bit of progress there is important, but again, focus on economic first. Now let's talk about Expedition a little bit. This is again the single player campaign where you go into different challenges and you get to fight the different armies set up in particular scenarios that the game presents to you. If you are able to 3-star these missions, which means meeting all of the requirements here, and these requirements do change a little bit depending on which level you go for, but when you 3-star a mission, you actually gain all of the daily rewards for that mission every single day without having to replay that expedition. So getting to 3 stars is important because every day you're going to get a chest full of goodies, and the most important of which is going to be the Medal of the Conqueror. These are a universal currency you can use in the Expedition Medal store to get some extremely important commanders for the progression of your account. So you will have an epic commander here that rotates every week, but I want to shift your focus to the refresh chances and Constance and Ethelflaed. Now, using these, you can see here, I have a ton saved up, but in the early game, these are going to be very hard to come by because early levels don't give that many. Ethelflaed is a legendary commander, and the only way that you can expertise her or max her out is by getting her sculptures here in the expedition. And she is, especially in the early game, very, very good. And again, she is a free legendary. Legendaries are the most powerful commanders, so the fact that you get her for free is extremely useful. Every player should and does use her, even if you are a sort of pay to win player. Now, late game, perhaps you phase her out, but for the most part, she's extremely useful, and she's another peacekeeping commander, which, if you remember, is good for killing barbarians. So she's always going to be usable. She's always going to be useful. But before you invest in her, because you can only get 3 of her sculptures per day, and to expertise her, you're going to need 690 and 10 to summon her. So really 700 sculptures. You can only get 3 of her a day, and they're pretty expensive. So in the early game, I want to shift your focus over to Constance. Okay, she is a blue commander, and she is the most useful blue commander in the game. And the reason for that is because all the blue commanders are useless except for Constance. Okay, I lied. Sarka and Gaius are very useful as well, but you'll notice that all 3 of these are gathering commanders. The reason that Constance is so much more important than the other ones is, one, you only get her from Expedition. You're not going to get her from anywhere else, so it's important that you get as many of her as you can. The reason for that is because her 3 skills here, you can ignore her first skill, which is not the case for a majority of commanders, and we're going to talk about that later, but her 4th skill in particular gives you 10% additional resources when you finish gathering. The reason that this is OP, this is broken, this is so good, and let me just point your attention over to some of the legendary commanders, such as Sunduk. Okay, her expertise gives her 10% resources when completing gathering. So it is, you need 700 legendary commander sculptures of Sunduk in order to get the same benefit that you get from Constance by just getting her 4th skill up to 5. Now, the reason that the 10% bonus is so good in Rise of Kingdoms is for 2 reasons. One, your alliance, and this is another benefit of your alliance, is that they can build what's known as an alliance resource pit. So here you can see we're building the Mother Lode, which is in late game the pretty much only one that you'll ever see. That's because it gives you guaranteed gold. But these resource pits have so many resources in them that even though it's able to be collected by your entire alliance simultaneously, it still will take multiple hours for you to collect the most amount of resources you can from the alliance resource pit. The reason that this is important is because this is where you're going to send your constants when you go to sleep, when you log off for long periods of time, just in general, because you're going to gather more resources from this pit than you will from any single node on the map, assuming that you join the pit when it first, you know, is planted down on the map. So look at this report, for example. Okay, I gathered from the mother load 705,000 gold, and my bonus was 218,000. Now there's a couple of other factors at play here, but one of the big ones, a 10% worth, is having constants in that alliance mother load. So that bonus of 10% is going to be extremely important, which is why you want to, again, focus on pushing expedition as far as possible, because you will get heads of constants in here, but also because the medals can be used to put more sculptures into her. As a side note, all of your elite commander sculptures that are universal should be put into constants until she's maxed out. That is the best use for these, because she's so much harder to get than Sarka, than Gaius, etc. The final thing I want to mention about the metal store is that you should always keep usually about 2,500, or if you can, 5,000 metals in reserves and never spend them. The reason for that is because sometimes when you refresh these chances here, you will see a legendary commander sculpture from the gold keys. So that's Charles Martel, Cao Cao, El Cid, Julius Caesar. Those types of commanders can show up here for 2,500 medals. And because it's so rare, you want to be able to buy them every single time that you see them. Beyond that, once you finish constants, obviously you want to push everything into Aethelflaed, and you get her not only from there, but also making sure you do these little side missions here. The rallying and garrison missions, these are going to give you daily treasures of the Warrior Queen, which have a chance of giving you Aethelflaed sculptures, which again is extremely important for maxing her out. Okay, next I want to just talk about a quick mistake that I see a lot of new players do, and that is that they will go in and they will use these resource items before they actually need to use them. What do I mean by this? Well, I can use this item and it will immediately give me 750 gold, but the game will give you a notice saying that it will exceed your storehouse protection and could be plundered if another player attacks me. So the reason that they give you this notification is because, and I'm victim of right now, it's because when you have so many resources in your city, especially at the early game where like the leadership of the kingdom isn't set in stone yet, consequences for attacking other players aren't really understood yet, people will scout your city and see you have a ton of resources just sitting there. And while you're offline and you can't do anything about it, they're going to attack your city. They're going to kill your troops. They're going to fill your hospital. And most importantly, they're going to steal your resources. All the resources that you work so hard to gather in the open field will be gone if they attack you. And if they're in item form, if you use them, well, then they're just free for somebody else's taken. But if you leave them in your resource items, they're just sitting here as little tokens. Okay, these cannot be stolen. Okay, you can use these whenever you want. Nobody can take these. And that's why it's important to not use these unless you absolutely need to. Now, just like the resource items, you don't want to be wasting your speed up items either. And in particular, the universal speed ups. Okay, these are the most important speed ups in the entire game, because you can use them on anything. You can use them for building, for research, for troop training, for hospital speed, anything that you can speed up, you can use these for. And what I'm going to recommend to you guys is that if you're a new player, don't use these at all for the beginning of the game. Don't use them to speed up your buildings or your research technology, or especially not your troops in the early game. You want to save those universal speed ups until you're able to compete in an event known as the Mightiest Governor. This event will come around periodically every couple of weeks, and it will give your kingdom the chance to unlock or gain sculptures of a particular legendary commander. Now you're going to be competing with other players here in these rankings, and usually the people who go absolutely just well up are going to be the ones that win. However, if you're a free-to-play player in a relatively small or new kingdom, you might have a chance if you save up the universal speed ups for a couple of months and then push all at that time. The reason that you can do that in this event is because one of the stages is giving you points based on the amount of power you gain in that particular day. So you can speed up a ton of days worth of power gain in a single day by using your universal speedups, and it'll give you the chance of unlocking or gaining sculptures of a legendary commander. Now, on the topic of events, it's extremely important for new players and especially free-to-play players to participate in as many events as you possibly can. You'll see on the event calendar that there are events going on right now, events that are coming up, events that have already passed, and one of the things that Rise of Kingdoms does really well, better than other games in this genre, is pump out a ton of new events and things that keep the game fresh, things that keep players engaged. And a lot of these events give you a ton of really good things that you need to progress your account absolutely for free. So for example, we have the Golden Kingdom right now. If you go through this multi-floor dungeon, you're going to gain a ton of equipment materials, maybe even fragments of equipment pieces. You're also going to get a bunch of experience, some resources. There's a ton of really important things you get from these events. This is another event that's very common. Each civilization has its own event, and by doing specific things on the map, such as spending action points or gathering, you're going to be able to get these specific. This is the Ottoman one, so it's the Ottoman helmet, and you can exchange them for items that you're going to need. So doing these events are extremely important, because again, it's just free stuff that you need to progress your account, especially as a free-to-play player. Some of the most important events to focus on in Rise of Kingdoms are Ark of Osiris, which you can see here. This game mode puts you and another alliance up against each other for an hour. And as you can see, some of the rewards are extremely good for doing well in this game mode. If your individual scores over 10,000, you can get 10 universal legendary commander sculptures for free multiple times per month. And these are the most rare thing that will come along in Rise of Kingdoms. Another very important event for legendary commander sculptures is called the Kurok Ceremony. This comes around, I think, once every month or every other month, and it will give you up to, I think, 12 or 13 legendary commander sculptures for free just by completing it. On top of that, there is a bunch of events that are really important, like Soroli Crisis, Ian's Ballads, and especially holiday events, which come around either every month or every other month. So we're talking about Halloween, Christmas, Valentine's Day, the summertime even as an event. Okay, so these holiday events give you a ton of really important stuff, especially again, legendary commander sculptures. Finally, the Sunset Canyon is a daily event that you should participate in, because a lot of the rewards are very good for getting equipment and equipment materials. You get between 5 and 7 attempts every single day to fight a pre-configuration of other players in your kingdom. So they basically, you set up your 5 armies and then you auto battle. And this is a very good event that you should be doing every single day if you want to have good equipment on your commanders, which we're going to talk about in a little bit. Okay, this part of the video is going to be really important. So please, if you've been tuning out, okay, this is when you want to pay attention, and this is investing in commanders. Okay, there are a ton of commanders in the game, and a lot of them look like they're good and they're not. And like I've mentioned previously in the video, legendary commander sculptures that are universal, that can be used on anybody, are extremely rare to come by. We've talked about some instances where you can get 10 sculptures, 12 sculptures, but to max out a commander, you need 700, and that's just for one commander. So investing in the right commanders is extremely important for your long-term success in Rise of Kingdoms. Not only that, but you're going to need to use golden stars, and these are going to be hard to come by in the early game as well as experience. So making the right investments is key. The first thing that you need to know is that for a majority of commanders, probably 90% of commanders or more, their first skill is the most important skill that you get to 5. This is called their active skill, and these trigger once every between 7 and 10 turns, depending on rage, and we won't get into that. But this is where a lot of your damage comes from. This is where a lot of your buffs come from, a lot of your utility, and these are almost always important for every single commander that you use when fighting other players. So it's important that when you're adding a skill onto a commander, that it goes into this first skill first. Now, the reason that I'm mentioning this is because depending on the level of your commander, you can actually accidentally put a point into the wrong skill. So what do I mean by this? Well, for my Pakal here, okay, just as an example, right now I have all 4 of his skills unlocked, which is what happens when you get the commander to 4 stars. So when you first get a commander, for example, you're only going to have their first skill unlocked. For example, my Edward doesn't have the other skills unlocked, only the first one. He comes by default that way. But because my Pakal is 4 stars, if I go ahead and I add a skill to him, there is a 25% chance of it landing in the first skill, because Rise of Kingdoms does not let you choose which skill that you want to upgrade directly. Now you do have some ways to influence which skills you put into. So for example, again, if we go back to my Edward, if I add a skill to him right now, the only skill it can go in is the first one, because the other ones aren't even unlocked yet. For my Pakal, that's not the case. I've unlocked all of them, so when I add a skill, it could go into any of them. One of the things you can do if you've gotten your commander to 4 stars but you didn't finish that first skill is use what's called the skill lock feature. It's this lock right here. You click that and you can drag this all the way down and hit save. You'll see the lock next to each of these skills here. That's how you know that this is the only skill that could possibly be upgraded if you add a skill to that commander. Now this feature is limited. Okay, let's say I really wanted that third skill. There is no way to guarantee that I get points in this third skill unless I've already maxed out the first two. So for example, even if I lock it here at 3, right now there is a 33% chance of it going into the one that I want. So it's important to use this feature in a way that maximizes your benefit, and that almost always means locking the first skill until it's at 5. Now before we talk about legendary commanders and which ones you should be focusing on, which by the way is a whole separate video and I've covered that many times on the channel, we first have to talk about epic commanders, okay? Because these are going to be the ones that are going to be the most available in the early game and also are obviously more powerful than the blues and the greens. Now even as epic commanders, a lot of these aren't that good. There's only a few that remain relevant into the late game, so to keep things simple, I'm going to give you guys an order with which I think you should invest in these epic commanders in the early game, because a lot of people forget that even epic commanders are kind of hard to upgrade when you first start playing. The first commander I would recommend investing in is Boudicca, which again is a little bit counterintuitive to what I mentioned earlier about Joan of Arc, but don't worry, I'll explain it. The reason you want to focus on Boudicca first, and in specific, you want to actually get her first two skills to 5. You can sort of ignore the last two for a while. You don't really need them. The most important part is that the second skill gives you a 25% bonus damage to barbarians and 20% bonus experience. This is in the early game very good for leveling up all of your other commanders, which is why you want to focus on her first, and then you want to move on to Joan of Arc. Now again, if you started as France, you're already going to be getting sculptures of her for free, but it's important in the early game to get her first two skills to 5. Okay, we've already talked about this, but the second skill is what's going to help you gather a ton, and then these last two skills, they're good, but you can ignore them in the early game for now. After Joan, you're going to want to get Matilda of Flanders again to that 5-5-1-1 point, and you're going to hear that terminology used a lot. People are going to say 5-5-1-1, or they're going to say 5-5-5-1, and they're just referencing the number of skill points in the left to right order. Okay, then I would recommend getting Queen Tamar of Georgia also to 5-5-1-1. This is the same reason as Joan, the same reason as Matilda. Queen Tamar is going to help you gather a lot more resources, and again in the early game these are going to be the commanders that you want to focus on for that reason. Once you've done that for those four commanders, I'm going to actually recommend you go back to Matilda and expertise her. What I mean by this is just put all of your universal epic commander sculptures into just Matilda until you unlock her expertise. And the reason for this is the same reason that I mentioned investing in Constance earlier, and it's because you gain the additional 10% resources, and this does stack with Constance. So once you've maxed out Matilda and Constance, you now get 20% bonus resources, which is super good for gathering at your alliance resource pit. Once you've expertise Matilda, I would recommend expertising Sun Tzu. This is going to be your first PvP commander. He's got a very good active skill, tons of damage, tons of skill damage. He's going to be very good for completing missions in expedition because he's so powerful. He has AoE, which is area of effect damage, which means he hits multiple targets at the same time. He is probably the most powerful epic commander in the entire game for PvP, so you want to expertise him next. Now if you picked France, you've probably gotten a ton more skills on Joan of Arc by now, but after Sun Tzu, I would recommend expertising Joan of Arc. Then I would expertise Bjorn because he's extremely powerful as well. Then I would recommend expertising Imhotep, that is the Egypt commander that isn't in the game yet, but he seems to be very promising. And after he's expertised, I would recommend expertising Bybars, also for the high damage area of effect. After that, it doesn't really matter. You're going to get these over time from silver and gold keys anyway. One thing I'll note is that you should not use universal sculptures on Lohar, despite me talking about how important his third skill is. You can get these sculptures for free by participating in the Lohar event that comes around periodically, so make sure that you level him up in that way instead of using universals. Next, let's talk about the order that I think you should invest in legendary commanders. And again, I have entire videos about this, but in the early game, I think you should get Richard the First from the Wheel of Fortune. He comes around relatively early. You want to get his first skill to 5. So enough Richard sculptures to get this first skill to 5. You can leave the rest at 1 if you want to. Then I would recommend expertising Yi Song A, meaning you get 700 sculptures, put all of them into Yi Song A. You get a very powerful 5 target circular AoE. He's extremely good, still used in the very late game. Then I would recommend expertising Alexander the Great. He is another commander that comes around relatively early on, a couple of months into the game, and he stays very powerful and relevant for a very long time. What I just told you is over 1,400 sculptures worth of investment, so that is more than enough to get you started for a very long time. But a couple of commanders to also note are Saladin. He comes around from the Mightiest Governor. You might want to unlock him if you can, especially if you're a spender. Same thing with Constantine as well. He would be somebody you would stop at 5511, but not that important, especially for free-to-play players these days. Finally, I want to talk about some commanders you should avoid. Okay, this is like the biggest pitfall of early game Rise of Kingdoms, is people unlock, for example, Cao Cao from the gold keys, and they start putting universal sculptures into him because he's the first legendary that they get. This is a huge mistake, okay? You do not want to put any universal commander sculptures into any of the legendary commanders that you can get from the gold keys. So that includes all of these commanders here, as well as whatever commander is coming from Egypt, okay? Again, do not, I can't emphasize this enough, put any universal legendary commander sculptures into any of the commanders that you see here, okay? Caesar, Freddy, Cao Cao, Martell, El Cid, none of the gatherers, Mehmed, Mulan, Ragnar, you're gonna get them for free over time, and you will probably use some of them, and some of them are usable for a while, like Charles Martell. Because you get them for free slowly over time, you don't want to waste universal sculptures on them. Other commanders you definitely want to avoid in the early game are going to be Edward of Woodstock, as well as Genghis Khan. These are commanders that come into the game, they look new and exciting, but they do not age well. They are very bad in the late game and are huge wastes of legendary commander sculptures, so definitely avoid that. Also, I do want to mention Charlemagne. He's another one of the worst commanders in the entire game. Avoid him as well. Generally, as a rule of thumb, it's important to start to invest in commanders in pairs, right? So we get Richard, then we get YSG. This is a well-known combination used for killing barbarians in the late game when barbarians get really, really strong. Furthermore, once you get Alexander, you can use Alexander and Yi Song A for high damage in PvP scenarios, especially in KvK2. But more than that, into the late game, you want to focus on commanders of the same troop type. So using commanders like Alexander the Great with Guan Yu. They're both infantry commanders. They both deal a lot of damage. There's a ton of synergy because they're both infantry commanders. So for you as a player, I want you guys to consider which troop type you want to focus on. Do you want to do infantry? Do you want to do cavalry? Do you want to do archers, right? There's a lot to pick from in this game. And by focusing on just one thing, you're sort of getting the most amount of value out of it because again, they come in pairs. And you have to remember, you have to put equipment on these commanders too. And equipment has a specific value that is most beneficial for a particular troop type. So what I recommended before is for all players, Richard, YSG, Alex, I think all players should expertise them. But moving on from that point, then you can decide where you want to specialize. And because two of those three commanders are infantry, most new players and free-to-play players should probably focus infantry, but you can easily make the argument for cavalry as well. Archers are maybe a little bit more late game and pay to win focus, but we won't get into that now. Next, we're going to talk briefly about equipment because this is again another entire topic that people have made tons of videos about, and it's very complex, but I just want to give you guys a quick breakdown of sort of the progression for which pieces of equipment you should focus on depending on which troop type you are focusing on. So I'm going to give credit really quick to Wick Gaming. He's another content creator here on YouTube. Credit to him for these images and these builds, but this is extremely important for new players to focus on. Okay, so first we're going to talk about archers. This is sort of the beginner archer set that you should focus on, okay? If you don't have the purple boots, you can do just the plain gray white boots, that's fine. This is the best build, again, that's what we're showing, the best build for archers as a beginner or new player. Then you want to progress to the entire epic set, then you want to replace two key components of the epic set, and then you want to go full golden. Look here, 1,400 days. I want you guys to focus on how long that is in years, okay? This is why I want to set this into your perspective, that this is not something you need to focus on right now. And that's why we're talking about progression, right? Yes, this is the best you could do, but this is years away. So focus on this, then progress to here, then here, then here. Now we can talk about the same thing for cavalry. Okay, this is your starter equipment build for cavalry. Then you want to focus on a couple of key epic pieces. Then you want to replace some of those epic pieces with legendary, and then this is the late game, end game, best possible cavalry set with special talents. Finally, this is for infantry. Okay, this is the beginner infantry set. Focus on this if you're a new infantry player. Then you want to replace most of it with the purple epic gear. Then you replace the helmet and the chest with some legendary gear. And then finally, in the late game, you have a full set of golden legendary equipment, all with the special talent. If this section did not make sense to you right now because you're brand new to the game, you will eventually want to come back and revisit some of the things we talked about here. Next, I want to talk about where you should spend your gems. Okay, gems are the premium currency here in Rise of Kingdoms. They're very rare to get as a free-to-play player, and of course you could just buy more if you wanted to, but as you get gems for free over time, where should you spend them as a free-to-play player who won't have a lot of them? Where do you get the most value for your gem spend? Well, the first thing to know is that there is an event that comes around called More Than Gems. Okay, and in that event, you actually gain bonus rewards for spending your gems, no matter what you spend them on. So it's important as a free-to-play player to save your gems, hoard your gems until the More Than Gems event comes around. And then you want to spend all of those gems on the things that you need for your account during that time frame, because you just get more value out of them. It's free value. The first place that you want to put your gems into is probably VIP, not only because you want VIP 6, but also VIP 10 is a crucial milestone for your account. The reason for that is because this is when you get one legendary commander sculpture every single day, guaranteed. That is huge. And of course, this does mean that it still will take a long time to expertise a commander, but still, the fact that it's guaranteed is so game changing. So getting VIP 10 first is a very important part of this early game equation. You can use your gems directly as a one-to-one trade for VIP points. 1,000 gems is 1,000 VIP points. Now, the other place that you might want to spend a lot of gems is on specific Wheels of Fortune. Now, these events pretty much never line up with the More Than Gems event, so this is sort of an exception to that rule, but some commanders in the game you can only get from what's called the Wheel of Fortune. Richard I is the first Wheel of Fortune commander that you're going to be exposed to. Luckily, Yi Song Ye is also a Wheel of Fortune commander, and so is Alexander the Great. So you will get familiar with this event. But essentially what this means is that you will spend some number of gems to spin the Wheel of Fortune, and you'll get some heads of the commander. That's what people call them. Essentially just sculptures that you use to increase the skills on that commander. Some other things to consider during the More Than Gems event are going to be purchasing Books of the Covenant and Master's Blueprints. These, we've already talked about books and the arrows, you get them for free by playing the game, but you need so many Books of the Covenant to get City Hall 25 that a lot of players end up just buying them for gems during the More Than Gems event. Okay, so that's something that you can do, and you will need these to get to the end game, but also Master's Blueprints. You need these to upgrade any building from 24 to 25, and the only way to get them is with gems. So you might as well buy these during the More Than Gems event, because you will need them later down the line. You'll need at least 7 or 8 of them in order to get your City Hall to 25, so keep that in mind. Some places where you should never spend your gems are in the shop here for resources or for speed ups, for boosts. This stuff, you never ever want to spend gems here. You also never really want to spend your gems in the VIP shop. There's some very small exceptions to this during the More Than Gems event. For the most part, you want to avoid that. And also the courier station. She's not in my city now, but you want to avoid spending your gems with the mysterious merchant all the time. You just never want to do that. Since we're on the topic of best practices when spending gems, let's talk about some other best practices as you're progressing your account. These are going to be some very valuable tips for getting some really nice rewards. The first tip is going to be gathering runes. Runes are dropped at holy sites, and these holy sites every single day, twice a day, once at reset and once halfway through, will spawn what's called guardians. Okay, and when you defeat a guardian, not only do you get a ton of experience for your commanders, so you should do this as a group every single day, but they will drop a rune, and these runes are random. Okay, and you can see here that these runes give you some buffs. Sometimes if your alliance or kingdom is very nice, they will actually put markers down for important buffs that you can find from these runes, because again, they are random every day. Sometimes you don't need anything that drops. But for the early game, 10% gathering speed is very, very good. 10% training speed is very, very good. You're also gonna see some really important buffs for building speed and research speed, and some of your biggest researches you want to save until you get the best possible rune, because it's going to save a ton of time. Guys, keep in mind, in the late game there are particular researches like unlocking your tier 5 units that will take over 70 days, or some researches take over 100 days of time, okay? So reducing that by 10% is huge, especially when it's absolutely free. All you have to do is wait until that specific rune does end up dropping. Another way to further reduce the building and research times for you for free is by having a title that is given to you by the king of your kingdom. Now, this only is relevant after you've taken the Lost Temple, which is the center of your home kingdom map, okay? So if you guys don't have titles in your kingdom right now, it's because your kingdom is not old enough. Now, some of these titles are extremely useful. Look at this. Prime Minister gets 15% resource production and 10% building speed. Imagine if you have a building that takes 30 days to upgrade, you reduce that by 10% just by having the title. Another very important one is Architect and Scientist. These are extremely useful, as well as a Duke, which gives you 10% training speed. Now, there's only one of these titles per kingdom, okay? So only one person can hold that title at that time. So right now you could see who the queen is, the prime minister, and all those things. But even though there's only one of those titles, it's often passed around to people who need it at that time. So for example, if you're upgrading a particular building, then you can ask for the architect title during that time, and hopefully you've gathered a building rune as well, and then you can start the building upgrade with the architect title. And then once somebody else is granted the architect title, you've already benefited from the reduced building time. It's not like losing the title will increase the amount of time it's going to take. No, once you start that building upgrade, the time that it takes is locked in place. Another best practice is do not let your hospital overflow. What that means is that when your city gets attacked, or when you fight barbarians, or you fight other players, some of those units are going to be injured. They're going to be called severely wounded units, okay? And severely wounded units cannot be used in battle until they're healed at the hospital. But what you can see here is that you have a particular hospital capacity, okay? For me, there's no wounded units in my hospital. My severely wounded capacity is 390,000 right now, which means that I can hold up to 390,000 units in my hospital, regardless of if they're tier 1 or tier 5 units. And then after that, once my hospital is full, any unit that would be severely wounded ends up dying because they have no hospital to go to. The hospital is full. And it's important to know that it is cheaper and faster to heal a unit than it is to train a new version of that unit. So you never want to get dead units if you can help it. Now, some instances like joining rallies and joining garrisons, you will guaranteed get some dead units. But if all you're doing is open field fighting, always keep an eye on how full your hospital is, because you never want it to overflow, which is the reason why you never want your city to get attacked while you're offline. In the same vein as that, you should not be fighting in the early game, okay? Especially if you're a free-to-play player, there's no point in fighting other players in your home kingdom, because all that's going to do is slow down your progress for your account, because now you're spending valuable resources on your hospital, which you didn't need to do. And also the other person has to do the same. So the entire kingdom actually is stunted in their growth by having civil wars. The final best practice that I want to mention is doing your dailies, okay? Obviously there's going to be main quests that you have to do, which you obviously should focus on, but there's also daily quests. And these daily quests you should do every single day when you log in, okay? And the reason for that is simple. You're going to get a ton of really good stuff that is super valuable. You're going to get a ton of resources. You're going to get speed ups. You're also going to get equipment material chests here, which is super, super good, especially in the later game. And once you've completed all these, you get gems for free, which you're going to need. Gold keys, crystal keys, relic coins, magic chest. There's tons of stuff that you need here. You also get universal epic commander sculptures, which you're definitely going to need in the early game. So make sure you're doing these every single day. Now, I do want to point out that these rewards get better as your city hall gets higher and as your kingdom progresses. So if you don't get the same rewards as you see for me, it's because you're a lower level and your kingdom is younger. Now, since we're talking about best practices, let's talk about some best practices when it comes to buying things in the game. Rise of Kingdoms is a free-to-play game, but there are tons of ways to spend money in the game, and many of you probably just shouldn't. Okay, it's free to play, just enjoy the game for free, and we'll talk about in a little bit some of the expectations that you should have as a free-to-play player. But some of you guys will want to spend money, and you may be tempted by Minamoto. Okay, the game likes to push Minamoto. If you're going to spend money in the game, where should you spend it? Now again, I actually made a full guide talking about this, so if you want to go really in depth, okay, there's a lot to spend money on, go ahead and check out that guide. But just on a quick note here, the best places to spend money in Rise of Kingdoms, if you're only going to spend just a couple of dollars, are going to be the 30-day gem supply, the growth fund, because this gives you a ton of gems when you hit City Hall 25, the Lucerne Scrolls, which is basically the battle pass here in Rise of Kingdoms. You're going to get a ton of goodies from this $5 battle pass for completing the challenges, which are things that you'll probably just be doing anyway by playing the game. You also might want to consider buying enough VIP bundles to get Minamoto to 5511. We've talked about this configuration before. The reason that Minamoto at 5511 is so good is because you get to skip this third skill, which is not good for PvP, and unfortunately you won't get the fourth skill all the way up to five, but for only, I think it's $30, you can get a pretty decent early game commander. And then later in the game, much later during Season of Conquest, you will actually be able to unlock another special buff for Minamoto that keeps him sort of relevant. He's very good in the early game. In the late game, he falls off in KVK 2 and 3, but then in Season of Conquest, he gets a little bit of a buff in relevance. He's not meta, but he's definitely decent. Beyond that, there's the King's Coronation bundle, which generally gives you decent value for a ton of stuff. You can only buy this bundle once, whereas others you can buy multiple times. And then there are holiday bundles for Halloween and Christmas and Valentine's Day, and those things typically give you a lot of good value when you spend there as well. And finally, it should be noted that you really should buy these bundles during an event called Recharge Rewards. Okay, these events typically come around the same time as holiday events, and the benefit is that when you make purchases every single day, you gain bonus rewards. Okay, so it's the same value, the same purchase, but you just get more stuff for it. So if you're gonna spend in the game, I would wait until the Recharge Rewards event comes around. Now, on the topic of making purchases, what I want to talk about is sort of your expectations as a free-to-play player. If you just started playing Rise of Kingdoms and you're enjoying it, what can you expect later down the line if you continue to not spend money? Well, first of all, you still can enjoy the game a ton. Okay, the game is built on the community and joining an active alliance and having fun fighting other players. Okay, and there are ways that you can do that as a free-to-play player, and if you start with this guide, there's a good chance that you'll be ahead of the curve for performing well in the late game. But a lot of the biggest battles in the game are going to come in the form of rallies versus garrisons. What that means is that as alliances progress across KVK maps, you can see there's different colors. This is different alliance territory, and if one alliance wants to take over a territory that another alliance already has, specifically in the middle of the map, which is the whole point of the game mode, you're going to have to destroy the other alliance's crusader flags. Now, you can reinforce these flags, and you can also rally the enemy flags with your commanders. As a free-to-play player, you should not expect to lead the rallies and lead the garrisons. Okay, it's just you need to have the best equipment, the best commanders, max level everything, max technology, tier 5 units. You really need to be the best of the best players to get the best results for your alliance and for your kingdom's performance. So as a free-to-play player, what you can do is reinforce. Okay, I can reinforce this crusader flag with my troops. It doesn't matter what commanders I have, all that matters is my troops are there. Okay, and during these rally versus garrison fights, the only thing that matters in those fights is the player that leads the rally and leads the garrison, which means as a free-to-play player, even though you might not have the best commanders or the best equipment or whatever the case is, you still contribute and are extremely vital to the performance of your kingdom and your alliance just by being present, being online, participating in those fights. And beyond that, it's fun to make progress in this game. It's fun to build up your city and build up your army and collect the different commanders, put a bunch of cool equipment on them, and just sort of be a part of the game and a part of the community. That is a lot of fun of Rise of Kingdoms. And as a free-to-play player, sure, it's going to take you a lot longer to get those upgrades, but it's going to feel a lot more rewarding when you do. So if you're a free-to-play player, will you be the strongest player in your kingdom? No, definitely not. There's almost no possible way that that could be the case, but you still have a meaningful contribution that you can make to your kingdom, so don't get discouraged. Now, I also want to touch on whether or not you should start over, okay? Because we've talked for a long time in this video about the best practices for a new player in Rise of Kingdoms, and you might be sitting there thinking, wow, I didn't pick the right server. I didn't pick the right civilization. I've invested in Julius Caesar and he said not to. Okay. You probably should not start over. Okay. Unless your account is like less than a week old or something like that, it's probably easier and faster to fix your account over time than it is to completely start over. By all means, if you want to start over, you can. There are groups of people who start over periodically for fun called jumper groups. You can find these groups in my Discord down below, and also they sometimes promote in comments and stuff like that. But for the most part, you probably shouldn't restart. Okay, the reason for that is because a lot of the mistakes that you may have made are easily fixed. Okay, if you pick the wrong civilization, great news, you can change civilizations for free. Okay, even if you've used the free civilization change that you get, you can just buy another one from the Alliance shop if there is one available. Okay, you can get them for free. Same thing with the commanders. Okay, it does, maybe it sucks that you put some universal sculptures into a commander like Cao Cao or Martell that you don't necessarily need to put universals into, but you know, that's a lesson learned, and moving forward it's better to just put the commander sculptures in the right place than it is to completely start over your entire account, because then you're just losing progress. Another thing you should do if you're considering restarting is start a farm account. Okay, we've talked about this earlier in the video, but if you start a farm account, you can actually do everything right now that you know the best things to do, and then you can decide in like a month if, you know, maybe your farm account is just performing better than your main account. Well, then that's your new main account, and there you go. Okay, this video has been way longer than I thought it would be, but hopefully you guys found this super useful if you're a brand new player just joining Rise of Kingdoms. As I mentioned before, there are a ton of guides on my YouTube channel, and other YouTubers across the platform make a ton of really good content for Rise of Kingdoms, so make sure you subscribe to my channel and click the bell to be notified the next time that I upload a Rise of Kingdoms guide. Comment down below any questions you have that I didn't answer in this video after you've checked to see if I've already made a video about it. Drop a thumbs up on the video, it really helps this video get out into the YouTube algorithm so other new players might actually see it. And finally, you can join my Discord in the link down below, and that's a place where you can interact with me and other Rise of Kingdoms players if you're looking for tips and advice. With that being said, guys, thank you so much for watching. This has been Omniarch. I will talk to you guys again soon. Peace.